The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Bob Dio, Bob engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this August 2nd, 2019. We are live during the week, weekdays, noon hour on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts at buckmastershow.com. Our media partners are TucsonSentinel.com, the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today is with Brent Dennis. Mr. Dennis has been the City of Tucson Parks Director. I think he began actually on April Fool's Day, April 1, last year. Hey, Brent, good to see you again.
Hey, good afternoon, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
Was it April Fool's Day?
No, actually, I drove. It was Sunday. It was Easter Sunday,
Easter
April 1st.
Sunday,
my
yeah.
first day was actually on April 2nd, that Monday. But
well, there you go.
Close enough.
And you hit the ground running right away. You had the huge project, the out and about in the community lobbying for the Proposition 407, part of Tucson Delivers. This was a $225 million bond effort that went before the voters in November, and people said they want their parks improved. And 128 well-worn, overcrowded, once green city parks needed some tender loving care, didn't they, Brent?
Yeah, and we were so thankful that the community understood the need. And the good news is that while the ballot language said that bonds would be issued in July of 2020, Mayor and Council a few months last year actually authorized the release of $12 million to advance fund a lot of the what we called low-hanging fruit projects. So we celebrated the first official Proposition 407 Parks and Connections Improvement Project out at Palo Verde Park on Ward 2's east side. And that was a splash pad, which that's proving to be one
of
the more
popular. People want splash pads, don't they?
Yeah, being a desert city, it should probably be no surprise. But, you know, our aquatic centers have always been a huge magnet for neighborhood and community groups to come out during the hot summer months. But, yeah, the splash pads are kind of like a water playground, more or less. But they're very, very popular, and we're going to be building dozen and a half, I think 18 of them eventually. But we were really excited to actually birth the first Prop 407 project there on the east side. And there's a lot in the pipeline. I think we have 82 capital projects in the pipeline for the coming 11 or 12 months.
All right, let's welcome now Tim Steller to the program. Tim, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, who's just back from a wonderful family vacation over in London. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing great. How are you, Bill?
Looked like it was a great trip.
Yep, it was great.
Your kids have used the parks over the years, haven't they, Tim?
Sure.
And do they like what, do you like what you're seeing with the park improvements, or have you noticed any of the park
I haven't noticed it myself. Uh-huh. I know in my neighborhood park there's a little money that's available for doing some sort of improvements, and so, you know, that'll be
what
good.
What neighborhood is that?
Highland Vista.
Huh. Mm-hmm. And there's a little park there?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a walking track around there and all that. Yep. Mm. And so, yeah, my understanding is there's going to be some improvements there. And that reminds me that, you know, I've written some about tree planting and
right.
that whole question of, is that climate change kind of protection? Does that play a role in your capital improvements or the overall bond election monies?
Yeah, that's a good question, Tim. So all of the park improvement projects, because we realized in our studies that the introduction or expansion of shade in the parks was really a high priority. So you'll be seeing landscape improvements across all the parks. A lot of the connections elements like the greenways and bikeways and some of the neighborhood sidewalk connections absolutely have new trees as part of that. I think overall there's several thousand new trees just as components of Proposition 407. But I also want to give a shout out to one of our great community partners, and that's Tucson Clean and Beautiful and Trees for Tucson. They help us celebrate Arbor Day every April by getting out in our parks. This past year we planted over 50 new trees at Sears Park. There by the Park Place Mall or shopping area. And they're just really quite visionary. I know Mayor Rothschild had challenged the city to plant, I think the goal was 10 or 20,000 trees, and we actually planted over 60,000 trees.
Wow.
So again, that's really important for a city that has, you know, a really almost year-round heat index. So there are a lot of heat islands in the city, which basically are just neighborhoods without trees. So that's a high priority area for us also.
And you, I recall speaking with you earlier about maintenance of trees or, you know, pruning, landscaping, all that kind of thing. Have you been able to streamline the process so that there isn't, you know, excessive pruning that kills trees and that kind of thing?
Right. No, that's a good question, Tim, also. So I think because I'm the only landscape architect on the executive leadership team, the city manager found me as the best go-to person to take you know, leadership role in that. So we are working with our landscape advisory committee on updating our community landscape maintenance standards and practices. And that's really important because as you go across the city, it's important for us to, you know, in a consistent way and also in an elevated quality way, be able to manage and maintain the public landscape. So we have all the departments that have different aspects of the public landscape. So Department of Transportation has a huge aspect in that regard. So they have, you know, tens of thousands of miles of streets, major roadways, boulevards, street islands and such. And the really cool thing I think in Tucson is a lot of neighborhood groups have actually come forward and they've adopted some of their street islands or traffic circles or corridors such as that. But we're really trying to improve the supervisory aspect and also the training component. So I sometimes kind of humorously use bonsai trees as an example that each person, kind of a bonsai artist, would approach that tree in a whole different way. So that's part of our challenge is when you get crews or neighborhood groups out looking at, you know, living, growing elements and what's, you know, best practices in terms of pruning or thinning and also the safety aspects, which are really paramount also.
There's so many items on that $225 million bond program that was passed, and the bonds haven't really gone out. They don't go out until next year, but you got some advance money from the city to start tackling these projects. And overall, did you give us that number of how many are on the agenda, how many projects over the 10-year period?
Yeah, there's over 525
wow.
capital projects over what we call it the next decade now, because we got a one-year head start on the program, 9 years. So, yeah, there's three-year phases, quite a few projects in each calendar year. But some of the more complex projects, you know, especially in our larger regional parks that have master plans, it takes almost a year of advanced planning, design, engineering to prepare the bid documents. So when those capital improvement dollars are ready, we've got contractors lined up ready to do those park improvements. And I know the joy and the excitement that the community had when 407 was passed, it was like, oh, well, now they have to wait. Some neighborhood groups or some, you know, people that love their small community park, they may be in phase three of the third year. So seeing a lot of improvements, you know, happening in certain parks this year and, you know, the next couple of years, and then having to wait 8 or 9 years is kind of tough, but it's all about when the funding's available.
There's so many issues that we need to get into over the next few minutes. park safety is huge. We now, for the last 3 months, we've had 10 full-time park safety officers known as PSOs. Dog parks are huge. People want more and more dog parks. We have 8 dog parks now, and there are more coming online. Are they all grass, the dog parks, or do you put some gravel with the grass, or what?
Yeah, actually, our ideal future design for dog parks would be if we can, if space allows, have about 5 acres allocated, with the space being divvied up into 3 lawn areas. That gives us two turf-covered dog parks for utilization through the year. And then we can actually rotate one off so that it can be restored. But yeah, that the ideal is to have turf dog parks.
All right. We do have a caller calling us at 790-2040. And the caller has obviously a parks question. And we've got the parks guy with us, who's the head of the Department of Fun. Is that... There you go.
Also known as
the Department of Fun, Parks and Rec. Go ahead. We've got Sixto, I think, on the line.
Yes, hello. My question is, I used to coach Little League at Tucson Mountain in the 80s, and we needed more softball fields and Little League fields, but there's no room at the park. So we were told that a regional park was going to be built at I-19 in Ajo along the Santa Cruz River. Can you update me on the status of that project?
Yeah, that's
been about 25 years.
Yeah, that's actually a Pima County Park System development. But we work closely with them, because when you look at kind of the global needs of the greater county and the Tucson metropolitan area, it's good for us to be in an ongoing conversation as what their plans are to help meet some of the recreational needs, as well as what City of Tucson has the capability of doing. The one thing that we've found that's part of Proposition 407 is the introduction of lighting. So a lot of our parks that have had loved recreation fields for a long time, by introducing LED lights so that there's more, I'd call, comfortable inventory of evening hours for the youth sports. That's really a very positive attribute of some of the 407 improvements.
All right, Brent Dennis, the head of Tucson Parks and Recreation, sticks around for segment number 2. Tim Steller is also here, columnist with the Arizona Daily Star. But Tim, you know what time it is.
It must be Mona's time.
It is. It's time to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Brent, and that's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They're located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They do such a great job now with those hot breakfasts. The breakfasts are available at 6:30 in the morning, and of course, right now they're open for lunch. Perhaps you didn't get breakfast this morning, and you've got a yearning for those blueberry pancakes or the chocolate pancakes. You could do breakfast right now at Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is also, there's a link to Mona's on my website, buckmastershow.com, and a link to all of our great partners here on the Buckmaster Show. Any questions about parks and recreation in the city of Tucson, call us at 790-2040. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Tim Steller is here, columnist from the Arizona Daily Star, and Brent Dennis is our Friday Focus interview. On Fridays, we are joined here on Buckmaster by one of our prestigious reporters in town who joined me in the questioning, and today it is Mr. Steller, just back from a wonderful family vacation. I enjoyed following your pictures of the family over in London, and a couple of the pictures I saw you had a huge map in front of you. It looked like you were in front of one of the, speaking of parks, one of the beautiful parks in London.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got to Hyde Park, and you know, some of those traditional pass-throughs that they've been what we were just talking about on the break. One of the interesting things about it is that many of them have fences and gates, fences around them and gates that you go through. It's, you know, such a different concept than we have here of kind of the open park that you walk into from any angle. Although I must say, we have well, these are golf courses, but if you look over at the Randolph Reed complex there, this has been something that's always bothered me. It's a popular walking area and running to go from, you know, Country Club down to 22nd over to Randolph across on Broadway. It's really not that pleasant because you're fenced off from the golf course, and then you're right next to these three busy streets on three sides of the square. Is there anything that might be done about that? Is that as far as you know? I mean, it's not your property, I guess, is it? The golf courses and or the Randolph Center would be
right,
but the other ones aren't, I guess, because they're golf courses.
Yeah, the thing that we found for community surveys is just as you explained, the number one interest or desire for our parks are walking trails. Mm-hmm. So some of the parks that the master plans indicate we're installing, you know, 360 degree walking experiences, some of which will have fitness centers or fitness equipment along it. We found that the residents that really like to walk around Reed Park, some of them are in their senior years, so having benches in shade is real important, and also water. So we're trying to be more thoughtful about the park amenities to make that experience. But yeah, there's nothing we can do about the busyness of 22nd Street and Broadway, actually Randolph, because the police station's there on the corner of Alvernon. That tends to be very busy also. But yeah, so people can, at least on the west side of the park, you can venture into the more landscape trails of the park.
So once upon a time, about 4 or 5 years ago, there was short-lived movement to expand Reed Park. Do you remember that, Bill? Did you do any shows on that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think the idea at the time was to take one of the golf courses and turn it into a part of the park. And it's that idea is not living right now, as far as you know, right?
No. In fact, the city's working with some partners, Rio Nuevo and University of Arizona, to actually upgrade the footprint of the golf courses. So
In your study, and I know you've been a landscape architect since 1981, I believe, and you studied the grand parks of America and places like Hyde Park, where Tim was visiting in London. And Tim was mentioning about that long gate, all those long fences.
Yeah, wire fences.
Yeah, the fences around. When did that kind of change? Because some of our older parks in the east still have those are fenced. When did that whole movement kind of change to bring down fences?
Yeah, I think it also had its origins in England. So some of the more pastoral type parks where they had lots of acreage, they liked the borrowed landscape where the parks kind of go on endlessly. I think that movement then migrated across the big pond, as they call it, into the U.S. But then Frederick Law Olmsted, the father of landscape architecture and the designer of Central Park, New York City.
Did he also do Golden Gate Park?
No, they talked to him.
In San Francisco?
Yeah, he actually proposed to develop the equivalent of a Central Park in the Noe Valley area.
Right.
And I think the city leadership identified the 1,017 acres out towards the Pacific Ocean as more of an ideal location to really spark additional residential and commercial development. So that's a good example where, you know, the trained landscape architectural expert, you know, weighed in on it. But I think I was in charge of Golden Gate Park for about 6 years.
I know that was one of your stops.
Yeah, the engineering of it was all based on a lot of the inspiration and some of the landscape architectural techniques that Frederick Law Olmsted had pioneered.
There are a couple of things we want to get into, and we're quickly running out of time. The foundation, this will be a nonprofit group that was formed to kind of give some extra support. How's that doing?
It's doing really well. Dane Wall, who was a former executive director at the YMCA's, he stepped forward, and he's the president or chair of the Tucson Parks Foundation. He's really brought a lot of new life, a lot of young energy on the board, and they're expanding their membership. But yeah, their purpose is to really be a very instrumental partner to help advance a lot of the recreational programming. They do have a fundraiser coming up the Friday after Labor Day. So I think it's September 5th or 6th, that
and
Friday.
That program, that foundation, will supplement what you're doing?
Yeah, they'll actually receive grant requests from our department to help fund. They've funded shade structures over playgrounds, actually new playgrounds.
Okay.
We're working with them right now. To do more funding for our KidCo program and youth sports. So that seems to be a really appealing or popular donor opportunity across the communities to really invest more in our young people.
Over the years, Tim Steller has written at the Arizona Daily Star about the homeless population. And of course, when the homeless are looking for some place to kind of hang out, parks become a natural place, don't they, Tim?
They sure do, yeah.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Well, yeah, especially certain parks. The ones that have come to mind for me because I'm more in these areas are Santa Rita and Anza over at Speedway and Stone. So, I mean, how do you handle that? I mean, is it just their right to be there and so there's nothing we can do? Or is there something we can do when the park almost becomes uninviting to other people?
Yeah, it's a challenge nationally. Actually, it's a challenge around the world. There are just unfortunate circumstances for a lot of individuals that, you know, whether they be a veteran that just has run into bad times or someone who hasn't been able to keep up with their mortgage payment and suddenly they're homeless. But yeah, if you look at the demographics and the kind of the diverse type of our transient population, It runs the gamut. But yeah, as you said, Tim, they have every right to be out in the public domain as long as they're not doing anything illegal, which that happens.
Sure.
So that's one of the tools in our toolbox. We're really pleased that Tucson Police Department had pioneered the park safety officers. So their presence out in a lot of the parks that are more challenged with, you know, homelessness. But we've also been introducing some other things that have seemed to be moving the needle. Mm-hmm. The one thing I heard from the community during the months leading up to Prop 407 is they just want their parks back. They want their parks back in terms of the level of maintenance and quality that they used to be, and they want them to be safer. They want them to be more welcoming. So some of the things that we've done over at Marty Birdman Center, we have a splash pad that historically had really been challenging because a lot of the homeless would use the water features to do their laundry or they'd bathe in them. There were a lot of kind of health and hygiene issues. So we worked with the city attorney's office and we were able to designate that space as a kid zone, mm-hmm. and it was properly signed. So adults were on notice that unless you were responsible or overseeing a young person actively enjoying that space that was designed for kids, that that gave us some basis to have them move on. So that's been one of the most transformative elements that we introduced, that neighborhood now has their park back. So they've had movie nights. You know, the Little Rec Center has a Kidco site now. It's whenever you can introduce positive activity into a public area, the homeless tend to just not be as comfortable and they move somewhere else.
The park safety officers, when they confront homeless folks, do these officers have resources available to help the homeless?
Absolutely. That's okay. That's probably an important piece. Yeah, that's right, Bill. They connect the people that want to receive the services, and there's a number of them that they just choose
For whatever reason they don't want to be
exactly
helped.
But I think they've been very successful with connecting people that have either medical needs or sometimes mental health issues or substance abuse issues. They've been very successful in connecting those that desire to accept them.
Brent, we're about out of time. Are there some other items that you were not able to cover that you want to get in real quickly?
Well, we have in part of our park assets, the Reed Park Zoo, and there's been so many positive things happening. My first year, I was really very much involved in that transition from the city operating and managing and maintaining the zoo to the Reed Park Zoological Society. Mm-hmm. So they had one of their best attendance years, their membership's growing. I think the other really key thing is the city resident support of that 10th of a penny sales tax mm-hmm. increase. That's bringing $100 million in to invest in the zoo. And I've seen the master plan. It's truly going to become a world-class zoo. It's really great right now, but you know, the recent opening of the Temple of Tiny Monkeys is a really solid example of the quality, the educational value, and I really personally respect their focus on conservation, that it's not just here in our 24 acres of our zoo, but they have global outreach, and that's also transformative.
And the grass program takes 3 years, the Bermuda grass program.
Oh, yeah, we're trying
to. Folks need to be patient. Yeah. All the parks aren't going to be all greened up overnight.
No, we've got a lot of things moving forward, but we have a great team, very passionate, dedicated parks and recreation professionals, and we also partner with the community. I never want to overlook or not mention the volunteers. So people are out there helping clean up their parks, love their parks, planting trees in their parks, having community events. And I've always said parks help build community, and that's the beauty of it.
Okay, Brent Dennis, and your door is always open. Your phone is always available for people to call if they've got any concerns about the park, right?
Absolutely. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back. Brent Dennis with us, the Parks and Recreation Director. He likes to call it AKA. He's the Director of the Department of Fun. Jim Nintzel is on the live line. Jim's going to be joining us, joining Tim Steller and myself as we talk about a really big news week here. The thing with Rosemont is huge. One of the biggest stories that I think certainly of the year and maybe of the last few years. That's one of the items that we're going to be talking about. Congressman Raul Grijalva has made an endorsement in the presidential race. He was the first Congress member to endorse Bernie Sanders in 2016 Well, now it's not Sanders. He's made a decision, and we'll tell you about who his candidate is. Those are a couple of the items that we will have with Jim Nintzel and Tim Steller. And again, thank you, Brent, for your support, okay?
Thank you, Bill.
1030 The Voice, trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. I'm Bill Buckmaster. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. A little bump music from one of my all-time favorite groups from my hometown, Chicago. Originally known as the CTA, they were Chicago Transit Authority for the first album or two, I think.
Really?
Yeah, Tim Steller with me in studio. Tim, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Did you not know that, Tim?
I did not know that. I'm guessing that the real CTA asked them to run the L and the other trains, and they said,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's kind of a third rail topic. Jim Nintzel from, Jim is the executive editor of the Tucson Weekly. He also has in his portfolio several other publications that he oversees. He's with us on the live line. Jim, did you know that about the group Chicago?
Yeah, Bill, and I was not surprised to see you down there in the third row when they were here in Tucson on Sunday night. So that was a heck of a show.
Yeah.
I'm glad we were both able to make it out there and do a little rock and roll.
Yeah, good show. Jim, summers are traditionally kind of in the news business, our business slow. This has not been a slow summer, to say the least. And I was saying before we took the break, kind of teasing the situation with the Canadian mining company based out of Toronto, the giant company of Hudbay, that this decision stopping Rosemont Mine, Jim, I believe is one of the biggest stories certainly of the year and maybe of the last couple of years. This is huge.
Well, yeah, and we will see whether it stands or it's more just a reprieve before execution for the Santa Rita Mountains. But it was a really, you know, this is a super complex case with a lot of different claims flying around regarding, you know, endangered species and whether or not the EPA properly went through the steps to ensure that the Army Corps of Engineers properly went through the steps to agree to have a water permit, the 404 permit that they needed. And I don't want to get too deep into the weeds of all the different legal arguments, but it seems as though the judge in this case didn't rule on the majority of those, but simply said that he thinks that the Forest Service, that there may be an illegitimate claim, essentially, to the right to use the Forest Service land and to dump the mining waste that they want to dump on that, because the judge essentially said that, you know, in order to stake a claim to that federal land, they need to show that there are valuable mineral deposits there, and they have not done that. And he's skeptical that they can show that there were valuable mineral deposits there, which would allow them to stake that claim to do the dumping in the first place. So it's going to be real interesting to see where that decision goes in through the appeals process. And now it goes back to the Forest Service to see about, how to properly, follow the judge's ruling here and process this proposal by Rosemont.
Go ahead, Tim.
Sorry about that, Bill. But practically speaking, Jim, isn't it the case that basically nothing will happen until the Ninth Circuit rules?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where this is headed next, and I don't think, you know, I don't know how you correct the flaw that unless you can somehow insert a bunch of minerals into the ground there where they want to use this Forest Service land. I don't know how you get around the judge there, but again, I'm not an expert in environmental law.
That's the opposite of extracting minerals.
Yeah.
putting them back.
They'll salt the area. Yeah. With copper and gold.
Oh, diamonds. Yeah, inject some diamonds.
This whole thing's going to go probably to the Supreme Court, but if the Ninth Circuit then overrules this, I guess Rosemont could go back to a situation where they could start work again, or would you have to wait? Then there'd be an appeal of the Ninth Circuit ruling, so maybe nothing will get done until the U.S. Supreme Court rules on this.
That's my suspicion. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Jim. Is it can it be accelerated? Is it accelerated in any sense? Or
that I don't know. Hmm. And keep in mind, there are a lot of other claims in this case that
would
have to be
on.
Further litigated, even once this particular hurdle is passed by Rosemont, if indeed it is. So this is going to be real fascinating to play out. I don't know that I was expecting this particular ruling or the grounds of this particular ruling in terms of them just saying it's illegitimate to be using this land in the first place as a tailings pile.
Yep.
And we have been talking about this, I think it was 2007 with then Supervisor Ray Carroll, who brought it to my attention about this huge mining project that was going to be going on south of town. So, Jim, this has been going on a long time.
Yeah, and it's certainly it's very unfortunate the county did not acquire this land themselves when the opportunity arose. But on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of parcels out there that folks would love to see the county acquire. So. It ain't over till it's over, and this one doesn't look like it's going to be over anytime soon.
Okay, before we move on, David would like to weigh in real quickly. David, what's your comment about Rosemont?
My comment is we all understand we need economic development, but this mine is going to decimate Santa Rita Mountains. We had a good opportunity for economic development a few years ago. Grand Canyon University wanted to open a campus here in Tucson. They only asked for 100 acres at El Rio Golf Course, a small footprint. It'd bring us jobs and economic development, yet the city outright rejected it. That's economic development with a small footprint, and the city rejected it. Now we're going to have the Rosemont Mine shut down our throats, and the cost, you know, of our public lands being buried in mining waste and desecrating the Santa Rita Mountains is horrendous.
It may not be shoved down our throats. Well, that's what we've been talking about, whether or not this will be delayed. One thing we want to talk about, and I teased this before the break, Raul Grijalva, Jim Nintzel, and Tim Steller has made his decision. He's been pretty early on in these presidential endorsements. He was the first to endorse Bernie Sanders. When I say first in Congress to endorse Bernie back in 2016. Now it's Senator Warren, Tim.
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting that he has gotten off the Sanders bandwagon. I think that maybe does have broader significance in that it's kind of saying, well, time to change the guard among the progressive, presidential candidates. It's Warren's turn, at least according to, the Grijalva progressive, what it was, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, what's it called?
The progressive wing of the party.
Yeah,
we'll
there's a caucus that he was a leader of. Uh-huh. Anyway, I think it suggests that there's probably going to be broader migration toward her and away from Sanders.
Jim?
Yeah, I think last time out, Sanders was the only man really standing in that spot of capturing that progressive wing of the party, and now he has competition. And you're starting to really see enthusiasm for Bernie fade, not only with Raul Grijalva, but with many people who are now looking for somebody else to carry that message that he was carrying.
Jim,
let's not forget, he's not even a Democrat.
Sanders, yeah.
Sanders.
Except when he's running for president.
Yeah.
Jim, what's your take on where we are with early voting? The ballots will be arriving in folks' mailboxes very soon, I think, maybe today or tomorrow, right?
Yep. It is on.
Yeah.
It is on,
it's
as
on.
They say.
Yeah.
We're going to see a big flood of ballots roll in from people who have already made their minds up, and some folks have. I think, Tim's paper had a poll this week. I think the Romero campaign also had a survey out there. And I think what we're seeing and what I'm hearing from the people talking in the background on these races is that you basically have a race where Steve Farley and Raheena Romero are neck and neck with about somewhere in the neighborhood of 30%, let's just say, of the voters each, and Randy Dorman's at about 10%, if you just want to talk about where things stand in the horse race. And that does leave a pretty significant number of undecided voters who are really going to decide this race. And we'll see as these ballots come in, but I think all the candidates will be chasing after the folks who have not yet cast a ballot that they think are likely to cast a ballot, and they're going to be grinding it out in the next 4 weeks to basically capture those ballots. It's an all-male, not gender, but delivery.
M-A-I-L, yeah.
Election. Yeah, the ballots have all gone out, and folks have to mail them back in, turn out in mayoral, or even, we really haven't had a tough mayoral primary in 20 years, so it's tough to look at it historically, but turnout in primaries in city elections tends to be relatively low, and I think it's just going to be target, and all these folks are going to be doing their best to figure out who's likely to vote and get them to send in those ballots.
I've been talking to some people, granted they're in the business, so they're not necessarily representative, who tell me they're kind of casting aside the two longtime politicians, Romero and Farley, and going for Dorman. I'm wondering, I have no idea if that's a broader movement, but I suspect it's possible that at least she moves up quite a bit among those undecided voters. If she's getting out there and getting her message out there, I don't know. What do you think, Jim? I suspect she could do better than at least her polling shows.
Oh yeah, I think at the end of the day she'll do better than where she's at now. As if you're undecided, you probably already know a little bit about Raheena and Steve.
Yeah, right,
they've
right.
been around, so you might naturally roll towards the candidate who is. Really, I think capturing a lot of support among the business community at this point. You know, the Chamber, I think, endorsed her.
Right.
And the Realtors, I think, endorsed her. And so you're seeing, but I don't know that business support in a Democratic primary is a real deal breaker. I don't think that's the constituency you really want. And I think a lot of this, there aren't a lot of differences between these candidates on the policy level. I think they agree on most of the big issues facing Tucson. And I think that what you're going to see is these races it's going to be a lot about name recognition, relationships that these different candidates have built around town over the last few years, and again, the whole how well you target your voters at this point.
What did you think about the Star's results on the polling, Jim, on the District 1? That's a very interesting race. You've got a four-way going on over there. Sammy Hamed was the Star's endorsement, and I think that poll showed him in the lead in District 1, didn't it?
It did, and no offense to Tim's news organization, but I think the sample size there was pretty small.
Okay.
And I don't know that it would be a super reliable survey of how those Ward 1 voters are going to go. I think all those candidates, I think you've got kind of an interesting, there's certainly a split within the Democratic Party between the pro-Grijalva people and the anti-Grijalva people. And in that particular race, you have some of the anti-Grijalva folks flowing over towards Sammy Hamed and some of them flowing towards Miguel Ortega. Lane Santa Cruz certainly has some experience within the office, but that has not always translated into electoral success. But she has raised the most money. Last time I checked those reports, and I think Rob Elias, who's coming into the race as somebody who people don't know very well, kind of crowds things up on the male end of things, so that I think moves some advantage to Lane Santa Cruz based on gender alone, and again, this is probably an election where people don't know a lot about the candidates, so they're voting on secondary characteristics, and I think but an Elias name in a race like that is helpful, even though he's not related to either Richard or his brother over Albert over at the transportation department in the city of Tucson.
Scott has sent us an email. Can you tell me if Rahina is off the city council if she loses the primary? Guys, you want to take that one?
This would be the end of her term. So if she loses the primary, she's on the city council through December, and then whoever wins that Ward 1 primary, because I don't believe there's a Republican in that race, would be the new Ward 1 council person.
So after we have the mayor's race pretty much decided, I don't want to say it's going to be over because Dr. Ackerley will be waiting in the wings to face whoever emerges out of the three-way Democratic race, and then we'll have a candidate presumably that will become the new Ward 1 council person. I think the attention is going to shift big time, guys, to the Sanctuary City movement.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be the Sanctuary City proposition, as you mentioned, is a really important. It's getting statewide attention already, even though we're not past the primary yet. It's a fascinating, gives a fascinating perspective on our local politics because there's, of course, a large faction of, I guess you would say, mostly progressives who support it. But it's shocking to me that none of the Democratic mayoral candidates have chosen to support it. Strikes me that's kind of an opportunity lost for someone.
Mm-hmm.
Just speaking strictly politically, I mean, if you can choose either one within your conscience, then that would have been an opportunity to
you
get.
You would have garnered a lot of folks who are backing that.
Right,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But all three have said, they think that it's going to just lead the city down into conflict with the state, and it's not, the right approach.
All right. Jim, final thought there? I've got to run.
I agree with you guys. I think that's going to be a huge issue moving forward and a lot of questions about the long-term implications for Tucson should something like that pass.
Jim Nintzel, thank you very much. I'll let you get back to work. Thanks, Jim.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Jim Nintzel from The Weekly and Tim Steller of The Star. Tim, what's your column about? Have you worked on that for Sunday yet? Thought about it?
Thank goodness, yes. I've been thinking and working to some extent. Yeah, there was a really interesting incident earlier this week at the U.S. Capitol in which Senator Martha McSally said she does not believe a sexual assault allegation by a U.S. Army colonel against a superior officer, and therefore she's voting to approve this officer's appointment to Joint Chiefs of Staff. Yeah, it seems to set her against her previous positions on military
All right.
sexual assault.
We will look for that in the Arizona Daily Star on Sunday. Thank you, Tim. Welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, we've got Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. That's coming up right after this on 1030 The Voice. Trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. Be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Stir it up, baby. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. My friends over in Silver City have a simple message for all of my friends here in Southern Arizona. Come visit us. It's a 3-hour drive, and when you do come, it will be cooler. That's my message. It's about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, so do the math. It's going to be cooler, and there's a lot of recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. You can find out all about it on their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is, Mr. Matt Russell, and he is always ready for a nice, cooling, soothing margarita.
You better believe it, Bill Buckmaster. You know, if there was a list of commemorative cocktails for Tucson, you'd got to think the margarita would be high atop that
there
list,
would be.
which makes the Old Pueblo the perfect venue for tonight's World Margarita Championship at Westward Look Resort. There's going to be a whole lot of shaking going on when master mixologists convene at 6:30 for an unforgettable evening of world-class margaritas, tastings, tequilas, southwestern cuisine. There's going to be a judge's choice and a people's choice for the best signature margarita, and it's all just $60 a person. Check it out tonight.
What's going on at the Sausage House?
Well, when you consider the kinds of cuisine that pairs best with craft brews, I think the ingredients should be as imaginative as the beers themselves. And the new menu at 1055 Brewing and Sausage House downtown is Exhibit A. Check it out. They're French fries with a North African harissa chili spice.
What?
Yes. A big bowl of cauliflower gratin with melted Gruyere and cheddar and sage and meatloaf sliders with local pork, which are kind of sliced thin and seared. And then stacked. All of these new dishes, including their lineup of sausages, can be paired with one of their great signature brews. I'm just digging this new menu, Bill.
What's going on with the new opening?
Another weekend watch, another restaurant opening. The folks from Prep and Pastry are launching a brand new concept tomorrow in Prep's original location on Campbell, just south of Fort Lowell. And this one is all about artisanal sandwiches and soups and salads. It's called August Roads, under the direction of partner chef Kyle Nottingham. And perhaps the coolest thing, Bill, about this concept is that it's a full-scratch bakery where they feature a wide range of breads that will be available not only for retail sale, but for bread service at Prep and Pastry and their sister restaurant, Commoner & Co. as well. August Roads opens tomorrow.
In the column, Inside Tucson Business, quickly.
Well, as you may have heard, Frankie Santos, longtime Tucson restaurateur, passed away recently. And my tribute to this man, known affectionately as Frankie Cheesesteak, is in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Glad you're doing that. Have a great weekend, Matt.
Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Our thanks to the whole team at Bustos Media here in Tucson. I'm going to have to run. We're out of time. All I can say is have a great weekend.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030, the voice of Tucson. Trusted local.